Hello, Stoned Apes and others who are curious about the healing powers of psychedelic medicines. Welcome to the Stoned Ape Reports. I am your host, Stuart Preston. Each episode, I talk to another Stoned Ape, somebody who has experienced the transformative powers of psychedelics, or with a practitioner who works with these medicines. In this episode, I had the pleasure of speaking with Dr. Robert Steck. Dr. Steck is a retired clinical psychologist, previously licensed in Connecticut and Saskatchewan. His master's thesis included analysis of data provided by Stanislav Grof when he was at the Maryland Psychiatric Research Center. Dr. Steck received his PhD under Duncan Blewett, who pioneered the use of LSD in the treatment of alcoholism in the early 1950s. So let's hear what else Dr. Steck has to say about altered states of consciousness, integration, and a couple of transformational experiences. Please enjoy this episode with Dr. Bob Steck. Dr. Steck, thank you so much for being here on the Stoned Ape Reports. I appreciate your time today. And I'd love to explore. So let's start off with a little bit about your background, you know, as a therapist and the work you've done with psychedelics specifically. So give us kind of a background on who you are and where you come from.
Sure. Although I started off going to a science and engineering school, I recognized that I enjoyed that as a hobby, but I was really interested in consciousness in general. This was a time when meditation was becoming known in the U.S., and also a time when Timothy Leary was out there telling the world to tune in, turn on, and drop out. Be that as it may, I wanted to, you know, explore consciousness in a more rigorous manner, and decided to go for my doctoral degree in psychology. At the time, it was the University of Saskatchewan Regina campus, soon to become University of Regina, where the founding chair of the department was Dr. Duncan Blewett. Dr. Blewett had participated in the research in Weyburn Hospital in the early mid-1950s with Abe Hoffer and others in looking at the use of psychedelics, LSD in particular, in the treatment of very severe alcoholism. And they did some of the very first research. So I became a student of Dr. Blewett, who by the time I met him, which would have been the late 60s, early 70s, made a quote that I've always remembered, which was, I took LSD to find out what it was like to be crazy. Instead, I found out what it was like to be sane. So very, very early that there were very positive uses of LSD and psychedelics in general. And have, of course, back then, as a graduate student, experimented a little, probably less than a dozen times, because it was illegal, even in Canada at the time. But I have followed the literature and have been a supporter of MAPS, the Multidisciplinary Association of Psychedelic Studies, and their clinical trials for treating post-traumatic stress disorder with MDMA, and a lot of the research the University of London has done on brain imaging of the psychedelics. And I've been a therapist as an individual therapist and did some group psychotherapy in my career. And about a year and a half ago, decided to offer my services to people who were having trouble integrating their psychedelic experience into their everyday life. Although I was a licensed psychologist in Connecticut and Saskatchewan, I'm since retired and haven't kept up my licensure. So I just offer my services essentially gratis. People have thanked me with gifts of flowers or something or other, but I don't charge for my services to help them for a short period of time understand what happened to them, make sense of what happened to them, and you know, get them comfortable with themselves again and trying to understand what went on in their experience.
Yeah, that's wonderful. And I'd love to hear, you know, if you could share anonymously, you know, maybe a couple of those experiences and what you've seen and what people have gone through, because obviously the Stoned Ape Reports is about people who have used psychedelics, entheogens, to make a significant change in their lives, whether that's addiction or breaking from religion or whatever it is. And so I was hoping maybe you could, you know, maybe share a couple of your best stories about things that you were a part of and things that you witnessed when it came to some transformational experiences.
Sure. One in particular, I guess it's kind of a two-parter, was a woman who came to me with an unusual request. While she herself had had some experience with ayahuasca ceremonies in the past year, it was so transformative for her that she thought there might be some help for her elderly mother, who did have brain cancer, although it was in remission at the time, but had a very severe alcoholism problem. And at first she wanted advice, and being more or less brought up to date on what the research had been showing, because her mother was very depressed and suicidal, but still drinking very heavily. And of course, she was interested at the time, is there anyone, you know, able to help her mother rather than herself because of her own transformative experiences? And while I couldn't participate directly in something like that, especially since she was out of state, I did give her advice and counsel as to what some of the potential benefits and potential dangers, you know, were in that. And she decided to seek out someone to help her out of state with her mother, and was able to, again, obtain some psychedelic mushrooms, preferring to use, you know, a natural substance that, again, a friend, you know, who had vouched for them, and to to see if this would help her aging mother. She did go through with this, giving her, you know, plenty of guidance on, you know, set and setting and dosage as best I could. But she did go through with this. She found someone to help her with her mother. Her mother had a successful, you know, trip, if you want to call it that, and went from you know, drinking, you know, several bottles of wine a day, if that's what she could find, and she was quite successful, even though she had a you know, caretakers that would come in and help her with other tasks. She would find it easy to, you know, to order and have someone deliver, you know, her alcohol. But after, you know, this one session in which she had what she considered a pleasant experience, it wasn't untoward, nothing bad happened. It was, you know, pleasant enough. She didn't really remark on it too much, but she stopped drinking after that one session. Now, unfortunately, about a month later, she started up again. So, you know, that's the warning here. I mean, this was, you know, kind of self-directed therapy by a family member with one session, which is very different than the current research that says, you know, you should perhaps have co-therapists with a structured therapy setting. But nevertheless, for a one trial under less than optimal conditions, she spontaneously, you know, stopped drinking and became much less depressed. I remember the woman even said she saw her mother smiling for the first time in months.
Wow.
After the session. So, yes, it has great potential. Yet at the same time, it's not something I can recommend, but people do seek out, underground therapists if they're not able to find a legitimate way of using psychedelics to help themselves. Now, the second part of this was that though the woman herself, who had had several ayahuasca experiences the previous year, again, she had her own feelings about what was going on with her mother. I mean, her mother probably, maybe had several years left of her life, but nevertheless, she was still being treated for her cancer. She was still depressed, right, and by this time had started drinking again, unfortunately. And she wanted to deal with her own issues. So she asked me to be with her while she found, again, her own source of psilocybin mushrooms.
Mm-hmm.
And while I did not administer it or, provide this material to her, I did agree to be with her as a guide, as a support person. And she, again, because she had had some experience, some very positive experience the previous year, she pretty much was self-guided. She had created her own musical playlist. And there are places on the web where you can find playlists that are used in some of the research that's ongoing. A lot of classical mm-hmm. music that is very conducive to turning inward and exploring one's internal states and thoughts and feelings. And so for me, it was very uneventful. I could be with her, provide her with a glass of water or get her set up. But for me, it was just sitting with her and being there and being supportive. Again, right, this was a positive experience for her, and she came out of it after several hours, again, telling me that she, had gone through her feelings about her mother and what was going on with her and how she was interacting with her, and had felt a lifting of some weight, we'll call it that, that she didn't feel the pressure that she had before she started, that she felt that she was better able to, to cope with the situation and what was going on. So, this is someone who has had some previous experience that was positive. Not everyone has those positive experiences, and that's some people that I talk to may have. For example, one person on one occasion, a younger person, not taken it on a dare, and again wasn't quite sure what it was. My advice to people who want to do this on their own, even though it may be illegal, is to get at least a double sample of whatever it is you're going to take. And there are places that you can find on the web that will assay those and tell you exactly what's in them and what percentage. Because right, street drugs can be diluted and mixed with other things, so you're never quite sure, which is why a lot of people who are interested in psychedelics have tended to grow their own psychedelic mushrooms and use them, because they know where they came from. In any event, this one person did not know exactly what she was on, and while she may have heard stories from friends, she was quite unprepared for she experienced, and began to question, herself and her sanity, what's real and what's unreal. Did this really happen? Could this have, affected me? Am I going to be like this forever? Those types of questions. So yeah. Over a period of several counseling sessions, informational, providing her with, solid, information from good research of what the effects typically are, what she had experienced, how that related to what other people have experienced, and providing emotional support that that she had looked at the world in a very different way than she ever had before. That's not to say that she wanted to go back. She just wanted to be reassured that what she had experienced had some basis in her life. Some of it was a very positive experience, and some of it was a negative experience for her. So she needed that type of reassurance over a period of several sessions to come to terms and eventually feel that, that's very interesting. I may not do it again, or maybe sometime in the future when I'm older and have a little more experience. But so that was a more typical type of supportive counseling for someone who wasn't quite sure what had happened to them.
Right. And that brings up, the importance of set and setting, whether somebody's doing it on their own or they're doing it in a therapeutic setting or a ceremonial setting. Exactly. Obviously set and setting is vital.
Exactly. And actually that was, one of the often attributed to Leary was set, setting, and dosage as the three important variables in a person's experience. But this was actually found by Duncan Blewett and Abe Hoffer and Humphrey Osmond in their research in Saskatchewan. And you can even find Duncan Blewett co-wrote with Nick Tsuelos the Handbook for the Therapeutic Use of LSD-25 in Individual and Group Psychotherapy. And that's still available on the MAPS website, and I think Arrowhead website as well. And it's pretty straightforward and straight look at how to best use these substances. And it's still in use today for people who are doing research as to the importance of setting and dosage. Back then, they used a very high dosage to break through to very severe alcoholics, as opposed to a low dosage therapies.
Okay. I keep hearing some real benefits of having a therapist involved in one's experience, from working through some hard experiences, some fears, to providing that proper set and setting. There's a lot of benefits that you have provided to people. I kind of want to turn that around and ask you, as a therapist, what benefits do the psychedelic substances themselves bring to the therapy sessions? As somebody looking to help somebody with something, how does psychedelics actually help the therapist help the patient?
Well, I think we all grow up. I think it was William James, the American psychologist back in the late 1800s, wrote of when we're born, the baby is born to a blooming, buzzing confusion, and it's all so new, sensory information coming in that is yet to be organized. And as we all know, it takes a few years for a baby to grow to an infant to begin to organize how we see reality, how we understand what's going on around us, and how we interact with other human beings. So we get a kind of a set way of as we become older and become adults, of how we interpret what's going on around us. But anyone who has taken even a little look at quantum physics knows that even the hard physical sciences, when they look at reality, when they look at the very lowest levels of what everything is made of, some very strange occurrences happen. It's very popular to read articles about this nowadays. But in any event, taking a psychedelic, especially with a therapist present, is a way of breaking through habitual ways of seeing the world that many people have tried more poetically to express, things like seeing the world in a grain of sand. People who have literary backgrounds try to express what is often considered inexpressible, because it's a very different way of experiencing the world. Some of this makes more sense in terms of current research, where they've shown, for example, if you just sit quietly, your brain produces what's called the default mode network, of which parts of your brain are typically connected to other parts of your brain. And certainly when you're processing visual information, that part of your brain lights up when you're doing these types of experiments. And under psychedelics, quite often a lot of the normal pathways no longer light up or don't light up as strongly, and new pathways connecting parts of the brain that aren't normally connected. There's a phenomenon called synesthesia, in which it does occur normally, but frequently happens under psychedelics, in which individual sounds produce the visual effect of different colors. So people see sounds in different colors because parts of the brain that aren't normally connected, except in a very small percentage of individuals, are now connected, and so they experience things differently. But someone who has been habitually seeing the world, the ordinary world as we see it, has these experiences and has no point of reference. They just don't understand. And that's when having a therapist or a guide, at least, who has these experiences can be reassuring. So breaking down the normal ways of processing information and finding that there are other ways. Now, those other ways, some of them may be valuable, some of them may not be so valuable. But it's really an explorer's attitude that many people bring to exploring their own consciousness with psychedelics. So that would be the biggest thing, I would say, that the psychedelics just break down that habitual way of looking at the world.
And open them up to really exploring when they might be closed off otherwise.
Exactly. Even traditional psychoanalytic theory, for example, says, some of our behavior is guided by unconscious impulses from when we were much younger. And certainly this makes sense, especially now that we're much more aware of things like post-traumatic stress disorder. Young childhood experiences that were frightening, that were so frightening that are pushed down into our unconscious, some of this material pops up spontaneously. Sometimes it's a direct memory, sometimes it's a symbolic recreation of some frightening experience. Again, having a guide or a therapist, to help deal with that experience of material that has been pushed down or repressed for many, many years and suddenly comes into consciousness can be quite frightening. So, a therapist or a guide is a good idea.
Yeah, that makes sense. And I think you may have gone into this, but I just wanted to ask, just in case you had any more light to shed on it, but the importance of integration. You do so much integration work. So can you tell us a little bit about how you work with somebody to integrate, or maybe offer up something that explorers out there could maybe do to help integrate their experiences so that they don't just end up losing the lessons that they learned?
Sure. One thing that is very helpful is keeping a journal, in particular a dream journal if you're working on things. And by that I don't mean just writing down what you remember at any given point in time, but being prepared, having that your voice recorder on your phone or a pad and pencil, if that's the way you prefer to use it, at your bedside. And quite often we are aware of the significance of a dream, that we may have a dream that seems to be, perhaps random events from a recent past that doesn't seem to be too significant, but oftentimes right. We recognize that this dream is important. There's something going on here, and I don't know what it is. And having a dream journal as a way of remembering, and the closer to the dream that you can write or verbalize your dream, the better, because they do fade very, very quickly. So, keeping a dream journal to use on your own or with your therapist is a good idea. Another useful tool is meditation. There are many places where you can learn mindfulness meditation or other types of meditation. Quite spontaneously, people find that some of these memories and thoughts and experiences that they've had under psychedelics can come up and be dealt with in a more controlled fashion while meditating. I think an analogy I once heard, if you've ever seen in a restaurant, one of those plate stackers where they pile plates on a spring-loaded platform and you can pop off a clean plate and mm-hmm. then the next one pops up and you have that as a source for your plates. Well, sometimes the mind works like that in reverse, in that you have an unpleasant memory or something you don't understand and want to get rid of, and it's like a dirty plate you put on that stacker, and you just kept putting more and more plates on top until all that stuff is further underneath. Well, meditation yeah. and psychedelics, hypnosis sometimes, other means of exploring consciousness can start taking those plates off. The benefit of meditation is that it's under more control. Many people feel that the loss of control is the most frightening aspect of a psychedelic experience. They think, oh my God, I could do anything, and I'm this is scary. With meditation, this is something that you learn over a period of time. It takes, it's not something you learn in just a week or two, but to get the benefits of meditation, it may take months. But at the same time, you are learning under controlled circumstances what to expect and how to deal with things that come up. So meditation is also a good way of learning to keep calm yourself, because it's an automatic calming mechanism in and of itself. And certainly, that's a good way. And certainly reading. I mean, there are many classics in the field of psychedelics. I'm thinking of readings by Alan Watts, by blanking now myself, Aldous Huxley, for example, mm-hmm. Between Heaven and Hell, other writers and other researchers who were among the initial ones to try to use the language that we have to talk about these things. So getting some, secondhand information, if you will, from thoughtful people, who have given a lot of thought to their experiences. These are some books that you could take a look at as well to help you understand your own experience.
Okay. Well, and what about, you mentioned other people, would it be beneficial to sit and talk with a group of other people who are going through similar things, even though they're essentially all lame and there's no professional therapist or whatnot? Is it beneficial just for explorers to talk amongst each other and help integrate their experiences?
Yeah, definitely. As long as it's done in a thoughtful way and,
right.
Taking other people's experiences is not necessarily of your own, because they all have different backgrounds than you do. Some of what they experience may be similar. Some of what they experience may be very, very different because of their different histories. But I have seen meetup groups. If you go to meetup.com, you will sometimes find groups of people who get together to help one another, support one another and help them explain their experiences. So that, again, they feel that communality of people who really understand a lot better what they are going through or have experienced than people who have never taken a psychedelic.
Right. You mentioned, and I don't know if you have an opinion on this, but you mentioned music as being part of some of these experiences. Do you have any thoughts or opinions on music for a psychedelic experience?
Again, I'm thinking more of the research-oriented music, but certainly people who have taken psychedelics on their own, a very popular way of taking psychedelics is to go to a concert or even to listen to your own playlist. But there's Helen Bonney, I think she was at the University of Maryland at the time, back in the 60s, I think was one of the first people to start looking at the effects of music on the psychedelic experience. And one of the therapists at the University of London has done some research on the importance of music. And similarly, at Johns Hopkins University in Baltimore, there's been some research done. Typically, if we say set, setting, and dosage, well, part of the setting is going to be the type of music you're listening to. It doesn't take too much imagination to figure out that, perhaps if you're taking unknown psychedelics and listening to heavy metal death music, you're going to have a very different experience than, listening on your own with a trusted friend, listening to classical music or folk music or whatever type of music that particularly interests you.
Okay, that makes good sense. And I've just got a couple more wrap-up questions. This first one is maybe a little bit off-topic, but I can't really let you go without asking about consciousness, given my own interest in it with my other podcast, the Consciousness Podcast. So I just wanted to know, and I think you and I could schedule a whole nother interview on that podcast, because I'd love to know so much about what you study and what you think. But in the context of this podcast, what have you learned anything about human consciousness from the observations you've made around psychedelics?
Certainly. I don't think I'm the first, to voice this. I think it was, William James, who after using nitrous oxide to explore his own consciousness, made a comment to the effect that our normal state of waking consciousness is but one way of experiencing the world, that there are other ways of experiencing the world. And this makes the most sense. Certainly, if I were to say to you, I was walking down the street and opened this door into this store, and there I was, standing, looking over the ocean, you're going to say, huh? And if I say, this was the dream I had last night, that's a different state of consciousness. I can understand you having that experience, but because that was a dream.
Right.
A different way of organizing your experiences. So I think it's that way of recognizing that there are many different ways of experiencing what we call the real world that become possible under psychedelics. And yes, it's going to be very dependent upon your own history and background, but I mean, I think one of the better guides is by James Fadiman, something called the Psychedelic Explorer's Guide, because you really are an explorer of new worlds, if you would, or at least new ways of seeing the world.
Yeah, excellent. So you mentioned that you're retired and you're still doing some real good. You don't necessarily do it for money; you do it for the benefits, which I think is awesome. But in your retirement, what things do you have your eyes on? What are you keeping focus on? What are you watching around the future of psychedelic and psychedelic therapies?
Well, I've been a supporter of MAPS almost since they began. Mm-hmm. Rick Doblin is doing great work getting approval of MDMA for the treatment of PTSD, but I think this is only the beginning. Mm-hmm. We're also seeing a lot of work on the use of psilocybin with depression, and some very remarkable results are coming out. Quite often in psychotherapy, you see a new therapy, and the initial results, seem extremely good, and then over time you begin to see it decline. I don't think that's going to be quite the same case with the psychedelics. I think we will see, and it may take 5, 10, even 20 years before you will find appropriately regulated, but also ways for people to enhance their own well-being as well as deal mm-hmm. with serious psychological issues above ground, completely legally in sanctioned clinics, and people will be able to get the benefits of psychedelics that for 50 years have been categorized as dangerous drugs, when in actuality they were misunderstood by many and misclassified. So I think the positive use of psychedelics will become more commonplace, although, again, it will take years of research. We do need the years of research to make sure we do know mm-hmm. as much as possible about what's going on with these substances, what their other interactions are with other medications, what best circumstances are best for certain conditions. So there's a lot of research that has to occur. But like I said, in the future, we will see more of the positive benefits of psychedelic therapy.
Yeah, wonderful. Well, I hope that comes true. Well, Dr. Steck, I can't thank you enough for coming on and being a part of this and contributing to the Stoned Ape Reports.
I was happy to be here, and I hope I've made some comments that have helped people understand where we're going with psychedelic therapy.
I am confident that you have, so thanks again.
You're welcome.
That concludes this edition of the Stoned Ape Reports. Thank you for listening. Please follow us on Instagram at Stoned Ape Comedy and subscribe to our newsletter at www.stonedapecomedy.com. Again, thanks for listening, and catch you next time, Stoned Apes.